Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show 100 and this week's guest is Lorraine Healy. Hello everyone out there in podcast pinhole land. Yeah, this is the Lenses Podcast and we're back. This is show 100. Andrew, hello.
Hello, I can't quite believe it. I didn't think we'd ever make it to show 100.
I don't think anyone was expecting to see us pop up in their new show. But here we are. Battered, bruised, and torn, but still on anchor.
We are.
Yep. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Happy New Year to you and to all our listeners. Mm-hmm. If you're listening, you know, like...
To everybody.
Yeah, if you're listening in July, well, clearly it doesn't... Well, maybe... I hope it's been a Happy New Year to you.
Yeah.
You know, I hope if you're listening to this in July, I hope you've got through the bad days of COVID. I hope you've had your injection and you're socializing and having parties or whatever it is that you do. But we did actually...
Not be in lockdown.
We've not been in lockdown, yeah. We did, just to clarify some things to listeners, we did record, in fact, two shows. Well, no, we didn't. Mm-hmm. We recorded a show... And you forgot to press record.
I forgot to press record.
We were trying to do it on Skype, weren't we? And we thought it might be a way forward, but Corey was caught out by the need to record it, press the button that said record. So we immediately had to go back and try and recreate all the enthusiasm and, you know, skill that we had in the first one it wasn't quite there. And then it was an MP4 file, so... Various people tried to help us convert it to MP3, but I think we just kind of...
We were already out of gas at that point.
I think we just gave up and said, you know what, let's just leave it for a bit. But we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
And how's life been treating you since the 1st of November?
Good. Just, you know, holidays. I picked up a little bit more work. We've been a little bit busier. So kind of that's been kind of taking a lot of my attention between that and surfing and trying to be home to help my wife with the kids being here, you know, not being in school and everybody's home. So I kind of put some energy into that. And yeah, I've been, my shooting's been slowed down a lot only because I've been having a problem with disposing of chemistry. But we'll talk about that later. But yeah, other than that, good.
Mm-hmm.
I have been shooting with my Instax. I use that, shooting with that a little bit. I posted some stuff that I've kind of been shooting with that, and yeah, it's fun. I really would like to get one of those Mint cameras, but they're really expensive.
The rangefinder cameras. You need to sell your kids for one of those.
Yeah, the ones that I were looking at there are, geez, they're $800. That's oof. Mm-hmm. Without having a little bit of worries about what's going to happen to Instax, because it would really suck to buy it and have it for 6 months, and then they just be like, "Oh, we're not making Instax anymore." You know, then we're okay.
Yeah, so, that's, you know. If the market falls out of the 15-year-old girl buying Instax, you know, if that market falls away, then they're not going to keep it going for aging hipsters like you, are they?
Not unless you kind of just start. Luckily, the price of it is not that bad, so you could theoretically kind of start putting some in the back of your closet, buying some, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you can get from Walmart where I live, there's a 4-pack of exposures, you know, for 10 packs or whatever. It's only like $30, so it's not dreadful, but you know,
I think it's, you know, I dabbled with Instax over the years. I'm much more of a sort of traditional Polaroid person, and I was very much into the peel apart stuff.
I like that too.
Yeah, so I miss that dreadfully. And I haven't had the enthusiasm really to get back into it because it diverts my limited financial resources, you know, away from normal film photography and paper. It's one too many things to be playing with. Because did you know I've now formally semi-retired?
You mentioned it.
You've been teasing me about it for about 2 years now.
Yeah, yeah. And but you went ahead and pulled the trigger and did it.
Yeah, I've got the tattoo now as well.
Yeah, the neck tattoo.
Before you say. So I'll just be working 5 days a month, which some people said that's an increase on what I was doing before.
That's too much, Andrew.
Anyway, there's I've heard a couple of slight interjections as our guest is trying to contain herself. Corey, do you want to introduce our guest into show 100? Sure. The very show 100. Honorary guest for show 100.
And this, our guest today was on the show on show, I think 14, we said 13 or 14.
14.
So she's back for 100. We have the ever so talented Miss Lorraine Healy. Hi, Lorraine.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, and Happy New Year, everybody. Yeah.
Welcome back. So I sold Lorraine a Holga that was modded out to do infrared, and she is doing infrared far better than I am. I'm glad it went to a good home, because it was sitting in my storage locker staring at me every time I would go in there. So sad. But yeah, now,
it's a beautiful camera.
Yeah, it works good. Cool.
Yeah. I love
it. So what have you been up to, Noreen?
Well, I actually was shooting that camera. I did some, I like to shoot for textures sometimes. And so I'll go on a kick and, you know, go find places that have interesting textures and shoot like crazy and then re-roll everything back and put those rolls away for a while. And I picked up one of those rolls that I shot, I think, in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot it recently with your camera. Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted with the results. They just came out really beautiful. So I'm going to do more of that, but I have to wait for the weather to get a little bit better to start shooting the textures again. Mm.
Is that the series that you have up on your Instagram page?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's also on Flickr and on my website.
Cool.
But
does it, sorry, Lorraine, does it matter if you, which scene you expose first? Are you tending to expose the textures first and then the main scene, or other way around?
I tend to shoot the textures first. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, when I happen upon something that I think will make, you know, like an interesting bottom layer, then I'll just, you know, I'll just go for it and take an entire roll of that. You know, hopefully I have some control about, ISO and exposure, but doesn't always happen because
it's a Holga.
It's a Holga. It's a Holga. And the reason why I do it with a Holga is because you can do it seamlessly. Because if you do it with another camera, then you'll have the frames, you know, the, and so with the Holga or with, a Sprocket Rocket in 35, you can do it seamlessly. And but in the case of the Sprocket Rocket, you can just shoot the, you know, through the sprockets even. And so then I don't have to worry about aligning the frame exactly with what I shot before. I want to try now to shoot a roll that I shot with the Holga but put it through a new camera, the Mamiya 6, and see what kind of results I get.
I would like that camera if you want to send it to me. I have another Holga. I'll trade you for that one if you like.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Okay, cool. That's the little bellows folder, isn't it? The Mamiya 6.
No, actually, I got the big beast.
Oh, did you? Okay. There's an earlier iteration, which is like a folding thing, isn't it?
Right, right. And I do have one like that, but it's a Zeiss Netar.
Yep.
That is, yeah, it's really nice too. But I had wanted one of the sort of the modern Mamiya 6 for a long time. And
They made it in a 6.7 too. I think it was the Mamiya 7.2. No, what was it?
The 7.2. Okay. Yeah, I had one of those back in the early 2000s. And it was just a bit heavy for me.
Yeah.
And this, the six is perfect. Plus it's the, you know, it's the square format that I really love.
Yep. Me too. Cool.
Yeah.
And you've got those on your Instagram feed. You can tell what you've been into just recently because you've been shooting with a Mamiya 6. You've been shooting with a Holger. Your pinholes we'll come on to in a minute. But I'm getting quite into developing color film. Are you developing this Ektar and the Velvia that you were using in pinholes? Are you doing that yourself or are you sending that out for development?
No, I send that out. I send that out. I never learned how to do color development. And I do a little bit of black and white development here at home. But Corey and I were talking about that before you came on, Andrew. And, you know, living in rural areas, disposing the chemistry becomes a, you know, a really big deal.
Yeah.
So
you could.
So I don't think I could even do color.
I thought that would be really easy. You just go out for a walk with a container, and as you're walking, just pour it over. Just pour it onto some vegetation. No one will ever know.
Or when you stop to fill your gas tank, just get the key from the guy at the desk and go in the bathroom and dump your chemistry in the.
There you go. There's all sorts of. I'm sure we can think of loads more ways for folks to.
Wow, you guys are really devious.
Devious and tedious. We're tedious and devious.
Yeah. Do what you got to do, Lorraine, for the sake of art, you know.
No, I send them out. I send them out, that's.
There aren't any. There aren't any film developing labs on Whidbey Island, are there?
Not anymore. We used to have actually a local, old fashioned film developers, and they were fabulous. But you know, they went out of business quite a few years ago, and then
Well, you're a proper professional artist, so you have to have consistency with your stuff. Me and Andrew are just kind of throwing darts in the night, you know, so. We can do it at home. It's not a big deal.
I was mentioning to Corey, Lorraine, when we were testing out the recording, that just before Christmas, I was given, someone messaged me, Andrew Atkinson from the Pinhole group.
Yeah.
Andrew messaged me and said, do you want this? I've got this Jobo CPE2 thing sitting in the corner of my office, and I'm not going to use it. I said, well, and he knew I was expanding. I'm expanding my darkroom, you know, so I can do some workshops in the Fens at some point, you know, if we're ever allowed to leave the house. So he said, would this be useful? And I thought, well, I'd never really thought about it. You know, I do some color developing just in the sink, you know, with the hot water and trying to keep the temperature steady. I've never bought one of those immersion heaters that you can buy.
Sous vide things?
The sous vide heaters, yeah. I never bought... Never,
yeah, that's what I
never,
use.
Never
yeah.
bought one of those. Well, I was thinking about getting one because... Although controlling the temperature in the sink and the basin was fairly okay, it did vary a bit, the temperature. And so I didn't look the gift horse in the mouth. I said, yes, please, I'll have it. And I have to say, I've been kind of blown away by the whole Jobo experience. I wanted to make sure it worked before I spent any more money on it. But it came with a tank, which is called a 1520 tank, which takes a couple of rolls of 35 mil or 120. But I didn't realize Jobo, Corey will know this, I don't know if you're familiar with Jobo stuff, but Lorraine.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
But it's all modular, isn't it? You know, and so now I went out and bought this 1530, which makes the whole thing longer. And I picked up a 1510, a Diddy one on eBay. And Jeff, I've just recently received from Jeff Perry of 20th Century Cameras, his latest 4x5 developing reel, which fits both the Patterson tanks and the Jobo. And I have to say, if it's anything as good as his previous one, I haven't used it yet, but it all seems fine. If it's anything as good as his previous one, then that'll be great. So that means I can now do 6 4x5, and then if I'm doing rotation development, it takes 240 mils in the small part and 330, yeah, so about 500. So it's about the same, actually, as a Stearman press volume of chemicals, but I do one extra sheet, no, two extra sheets. And the rotation, hopefully will lead to some consistent results. I've developed a few colour rolls for it, and I have to say, the colour rolls I've done have been mainly ectar, and I'm not very good at scanning, and I've always had trouble with scanning colour negatives, but fingers crossed, the ones I've had out of this Jobo, I've had to do very, very little, you know, after work on it in terms of correction and stuff. So I'm hoping that's just down to the Jobo.
I saw some of them up, and they look pretty good to me.
Yeah, they look...
I think you did a pretty good job.
Well, it's all very basic, you know. I don't... anyone who knows me knows I hate going on computers and doing things. So I've just got an old version of Photoshop Elements, and all I know how to do with that really is adjust, you know, the highlights and the shadows a bit, and I have a guess at removing color cast, but I wasn't really getting many color casts. It was so I don't know what that is really, whether it's down to the Jobo. I've not spent a lot of money on it, and I'm kind of enamored with the system so far. I just hope it keeps going, because I don't know, the CPE2 is quite an old beast, so I'm hoping it doesn't pack up.
Those are bomb-proof, though, for the most part. I mean,
well, I think there was a CPE2 Plus, which had a beefed-up motor, because I've got a feeling there might have been some issues with the motor, but it seems fine, you know, so we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. So that's colour. That's, you know, we're very enamoured by your colour work, Lorraine. And
well, thank you.
You entered some of it in the Holger Week pinhole competition, which we have actually spoken about, Corey and I, but they're in the two shows that never made it the Lensless Podcast, the lost episodes. And one day they might come to light. Maybe. But Corey, can you remember who the winners were?
Rene Vonk won the, with him sitting in the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of those. That's kind of like his thing, is he does that self-portrait. And that's what I started following him a long time ago. He was doing those where he just sits there for a second, and I guess he just gets up and moves, you know?
Yep.
And I really like those. He does a good job with those. And then the runner-up was Doug. Doug Robbins, wasn't it?
Yeah, Doug is... I don't think... I think it must be... that's certainly not anyone called Doug sitting on in the photograph. I thought at first it was a self-portrait, but it's not. Clearly,
no.
It's a lady sitting down, cross-legged, and
that's at the bridge, right?
Yeah, and all kinds of weird things going on. Yeah. I don't know whether that was deliberate or accidental, with lots of frame overlaps, but it doesn't really matter because it really works well.
Yeah, and we like the gimmicks.
Yeah. So anybody listening, and Lorraine, you know, just next year, if you can do color and make it a bit gimmicky, you'll be bound to win.
Yeah, you're a shoe-in, Ori. That's what we call a shoe-in.
Well, to do Holger Week. I really enjoy it. So, but I like to try new things every year.
You'd been working on using Velvia 50, and you entered the competition with two. One of which I think was, they're both color film Velvia 50, but one of them you converted to black and white. And one with with the sort of pilot.
It had a bit of a too much of a color cast that I couldn't get rid of, and that happens with Velvia when you're doing pinhole. So
I have shot.
So converting.
Give us some tips then on shooting with Velvia, because I can't remember which Velvia I've used, but I was looking in my little notebook and I've got that Velvia 100. I've got written down here up to about a minute, no correction. And then even at 2 minutes, you only have to add a third of a stop. But Velvia 50, there is some additions to add. Provia apparently, no correction up to about 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
But 50. So why 50? And tell us all about Velvia 50.
I love, it's garishly saturated, which sort of, is up my alley, and I hadn't done a lot of Velvia 50 in pinhole because, you know, we very seldom get that kind of bright light
That works for it?
That works for, you know, right now, if I put a roll of LVF50 in one of the pinholes, you know, it'd probably be out for 3 days and get nothing. So so I did like four or five rolls in October, because I had to make a short trip to Eastern Washington, which is about 300 miles from where I am. And Eastern Washington is, you know, sort of the opposite of Western Washington. There's not many trees, but and there's a lot of sun.
It's kind of dry and arid, huh?
It's very dry. It's very dry. And so I knew that I was going to have, you know, plenty of light. So so I planned to shoot Velvia 50. And I did four or five rolls, and they came out beautifully. So I think really the key to Velvia 50 is tons of light. It's like, you know, infrared.
Yeah.
They just want a lot of light. Mm. So that I think that's the only piece of advice. And then, you know, if you're using the app Pinhole Assist, it factors in the reciprocity that you need. And but if you have plenty of light, you know, you're not going to be adding a lot of time to the exposure. So
I think, are these the ones on your Instagram feed, the one that leaps out at me because of the glowing foliage, Finley Lagoon, Snake River, is that that area you're talking about?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That'll be a 50. Yes. Finley Lagoon. This is on Lorraine's Instagram site. Not far down, and it's just, as you say, beautifully saturated with glowing. It's all I can describe it as, glowing. Almost reminds me of infrared, you know? Not in any way right. Color shifts, but that kind of glow you get, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And let me find the...
And then...
The length of exposure for that... let's see. What's
I'm very impressed if you can lay your fingers on, lay your hands on the exposure time. If anyone asked me, I thought, yes, well, I don't know. No idea.
As long as it was open, it was open and I closed it.
I keep track of all of that.
God bless you.
But yeah, it was actually it was almost an afterthought. I had actually gone to Eastern Washington to shoot these senior pictures. I don't know if you guys do that, Andrew, but when kids are in their last year of high school here, they do a sort of a photo session, and they do portraits you know, they're sort of a big deal.
How old are and, the youngsters?
They 18? Are 17, okay. 18, you know, around there. And a young man who's part of my family is a senior, and he needed his pictures taken. And
you did it. You took your pinhole camera.
I did it. I went down and so it was okay. So it was 1.3 second for that shot, and it shows no correction actually. Yeah. So it's probably the same for as Provia or Velvia 100.
Yeah, one second is about 1 second according to my notes that I wrote from the Kodak. I went on the Kodak website and looked at some of these things. 4 seconds. It only goes up to 5.5. So you'd probably get away with 4 and 8. 8 becomes 12. So it's starting to get a bit more, you know, sort of 50%.
Right.
But if you've got bags of light, you know, it's only
going to be quick.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of the the key to using. And
your lab. So your Velvia. Lab that, I mean, this is slide film coming back or chrome film. I was going to ask a really stupid question. Then I was thinking about negative film, because when labs scan color negative, they tend to send back fairly flat scans, don't they? So you can make sure they don't clip any highlights or shadows, and then you in Photoshop or Lightroom, you can go and just increase the contrast or whatever, or bring the
sometimes you can just request no color correction and mm-hmm. just get the straight scan.
Yeah. Well, I'm never really.
I actually do my own scanning, yeah. So I just ask for developing, yeah. And then.
But slides, yeah, you want slides to come back ready to go, don't you? You know, like in the old days. Well, in fact, for me, if I'm shooting slide right. film,
yeah,
it's 35 yeah. millimeter, and it's for projection. You know, that's about all I use slide film for. So I'm, right. you know, obviously I can't. I want them back looking great.
mm-hmm.
But so that's a stupid question. I don't know why. I don't know where I was going with that, but it was clearly an idiotic.
Don't worry, Andrew. We're getting used to it.
It's been such a long time since we've had a podcast. So my sensible head, I've left off. I think I was drawn. Yeah. I was first saw these. I was looking at the bridge pictures that you shared, probably in the Facebook group and elsewhere. A very moody picture. I think it must be the same area. Oh no, Arlington, a bridge. Bridge too far, and, oh, yeah. and then there's another bridge. Bridges are great, aren't they? Which Umptanum Trail.
Yeah, and that was on this trip to Eastern Washington. Umptanum is, and actually it was a place that I wanted to shoot for a long time, and when I got there, it was still smoking. It had been part of the wildfires this summer, so I couldn't actually go to the little waterfalls that I'd been planning to shoot.
That's a bummer.
But
well, this is better than waterfalls. Waterfalls are
bridges and pinhole. There, you're just like automatically drawn to them. I think.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You get that weird perspective, and yeah. yeah.
So that's we've got a couple of questions. If you wouldn't mind, you've probably seen them. You're very kindly not answered them online. We've got a couple of questions in the Facebook group. So you're honoured, because normally I don't often ask the Facebook group to ask questions. When I do, I just everyone ignores me. So,
but I saw a couple of questions. One from Neil and one.
That's
from
right.
Greg.
Yeah. So the first one from Neil Piper is, Lorraine, oh, yeah. I'd like to hear your thoughts on infrared, which is what Corey was just talking about, mm-hmm. black and white pinhole images. And if you have any hints or tips for me who would like to try it when the summer rolls around, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and I've saved my settings for
goodness me
for doing pinhole infrared. I saved that screenshot because I knew that I would need it. Down the road, and so I think mostly I shoot with Rolly 400, and that doesn't have its own setting on the pinhole app, the pinhole assist. So I choose Kodak Tri-X 400, and then add the filter, the infrared filter. So like I have some pinholes of trees that I did I think 2 years ago, and I was looking at those exposures, and it was very bright, and the exposure was metered at 1 second. Wow. And the exposure corrected was 1 minute and 21 mm-hmm. seconds. So, but those are, you know, those are the settings I use. And, I can put this up on the Facebook, page, for Neil and anybody who's
which
interested.
Filter are you using? Are you using one that you can still see through, like a 25, or the really deep red one that you can't see through?
No, the really deep red
one. I'm surprised. Yeah, I thought you might be there for about an hour. Goodness me.
It's the Hoya.
Well, you know, that's when you know if it's bright, yeah. it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank
you. I think that filter is the Hoya R72.
It is. Yeah. I've got that somewhere. Right, yeah. I think I've got a 52 mil version of it, which would fit straight onto my reality, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Right. Yeah, I put it on my Zero, and it, you know, it works. Mm-hmm.
We don't get sunshine here, a bit like the west to where you live, Lorraine. Right. You know?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the odd day. But
did you get impacted? But sorry, when I get
no, but when I get to go, you know, somewhere like, you know, I get to go to Eastern Washington quite a bit, and so then it's like, you know.
And the weather's that much different, is it? How you're on the same latitude, aren't you? So you're just sort of moving across, are you, or are you moving down?
There's a big mountain range in the way.
Is that what does it? The mountain range?
Actually, it's the mountain range. Yeah, because the mountain range is so high that it actually stops
the weather.
You know, the clouds moving over. So you know, we get them on this side, but as soon as you're over on the other side,
dries out.
You get a lot of sunshine. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You should move.
You should move.
No.
Well, so with all that rain, if there's that much rain, how come did the wildfires affect you, or did the rain just put it?
Well, the wildfires are on that side, on the eastern side.
I'm with you.
So
they didn't affect you on your little island there.
No, we got the smoke though. Yeah. So actually, it was interesting because even from the very beginning of the COVID pandemic, you know, we were not in, you know, very strict lockdown. The numbers here where I live were very good from the start, and people were very careful. So, you know, we could move around and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, do little trips, you know, within reason, and, you know, wear our masks and all that. But, we weren't confined to our houses. But then when the wildfires started in California and Oregon and in Washington, then we had to stay in, but it was because of the smoke.
Yeah. It was probably really irritating.
Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. Yeah. Thanks. And it's really hard to explain it to a dog.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's another question from the aforementioned Greg.
So it was very interesting.
Yes. Lorraine, I'd like to ask if your poetry informs your photographic work, and similarly, does your work with capturing photographs inform any of your poetic work? Does it work backwards and forwards? Also, do you find inspiration in music or sound for either your photography or poetry?
Yeah, I love that question. I get that question a lot in the poetry side of my life. Poetry readings, people will ask me, well, you know, how does your photography come into the poetry? My usual answer is that they sort of go on very close but parallel tracks. I never set out to do a series of photos to illustrate poems or write poems that go with photos, except in very, like, a couple times that has happened, that I have put together a poem and
it worked out,
and a photograph that worked out. Yeah. If you read my poetry, it's heavily visual. You know, there's a lot of visual detail, to the point that where I really have to make myself get the other senses into the writing, you know, because, you know, get sound and get sand, that, you know, that kind of detail into a poem and not just visual detail. I think, you know, maybe other people can see similarities between my writing and my poetry.
I may have asked you this a couple of years ago, but have you thought about publishing a book of both, you know, pinhole work and then matching them with poetry?
I've never thought about it because I think the photography, you know, it's like you produce a lot, and even if you, you know, cull down to your best, you still have quite a bit of, you know, of work at the end of the day. And it's harder, I think, to, for me at least, to produce as many poems that would go with that. Whereas, you know, if I try to, you know, put stuff that sort of, you know, rest, you know, to put them together in a way that resonate with each other, but they're not really the same thing, that might work. Yeah, that might definitely work. I did that with a little chapbook of poetry that I didn't quite have enough pages of poems. And so my publisher said, well, do you have some photographs that we could put in? And I did. And that sort of worked. That worked okay. Yeah. I'm thinking about it with this sort of long series about the forgotten America, what I call forgotten America, and Route 66.
Nice.
Yeah, sort of. But I would need to write more to go with that.
I've got a couple of your poetry books. I can't remember if it's the first one. One of them talks about your early days in Argentina.
Right, yeah.
And,
right,
you know, it touches upon, I guess you're referring to Galtieri and people like that and things. And then there's the one, I think the more recent one, which is Mostly Luck. Is that the more recent one, Mostly Luck? I can't remember what the first one was called.
Right, yeah, Yeah, the first one is The Habit of Buenos Aires.
Yeah, and that was very much, that's a very, right. That's a very, I gave it to my daughter to read, and she, in fact, both of them, she just loves them. But that I read that one, the one of your, I guess, childhood, is it? I can't, you know, pretty much growing up.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, growing up. Yeah.
And that's very visual. I mean, you read those poems and you're right there, you know, with the situation of describing people and ladies on tubes and, you know, and right. Things that you'd have seen in the news and things that were going on around you. But I mean, how old were you when you were experiencing all of that, you know, in Argentina?
Well, I was in my first year of high school. I think we had gone into, it was like the first 10 days of high school, and then the 1976 coup happened. And so sort of the whole of my high school was the years of the dirty, what's known now as the dirty war. So
that's when all the people disappeared, and then you start seeing the mothers meeting with, because they still do that, don't they? The mothers, a lot have disappeared, and they.
Yeah, yeah, they are. I don't think they're doing it anymore. You know, partly because so many of them have died. You know, they've gotten, you know, the ones that are surviving are, you know, in their 90s. And so, I think they stopped doing that a while ago. But yes, they did it for years and years and years. Yeah.
And Mostly Luck was quite a bit different, because I haven't got it to hand, but I remember there's a sort of recurring theme of, I'm going to say either fruit or vegetables or plants or something. There's something about.
Yes.
What is it? Remind me. I can't remember that.
Well, it's a book that I wrote, and it's about this place, about, you know, the island, Whidbey Island, and the 5 acres that I'm, you know, fortunate enough to live on, and the road, the road that I walk my dogs on, and you know, when you have dogs, you have to walk them every day, and so so I gave myself the assignment of writing an ode a month to the month, so that made me really have to pay attention for a full year, and then it went longer, and it was a really interesting idea, very fruitful. And then I like to garden, so you know, there's you know, the plants and the vegetables that Andrew was mentioning.
Yeah, that's right. I remember it. You have like Ode to February, yeah, don't you, as well, or something, or whatever the month is.
Right, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. Ode to every month. And, yeah, and then, you know, like Ode to Garlic that's and stuff like that. Yeah, so it was a very fun book to write.
And are you working on anything now?
Yeah, I am. I'm working on I'm working on it's taking longer though. I'm working on a book of poems about all the strands of my ancestry. Ooh. So so the Irish, the French, and Italian, and what I've done is I decided that I really needed to travel to the places.
How's that working out for you?
For my family. Oh, it's fabulous. It's, you know, and I said, well, I'm doing research, you know, it's not just for fun, you know, haha. But of course, growing up, I had spent time in Ireland with, you know, my great aunts. And so I was very familiar with the Irish places, but I went to Provence, to the eastern side, you know, not the posh part of Provence, but the eastern part of Provence, where my maternal line comes from. And it took me a long time to even know that's where they were from, and even to find out their last name. And so that was pretty fabulous experience to go back there and see where they were from, and to see that everybody looked like my grandmother. It was shocking. It was absolutely shocking.
So was this a fairly small community that you went back to looking?
Yeah, 186 people.
Right. And any of them were sort of blood relatives to you? Or were you related to all of them?
I was. Apparently, I was related to all of them. There's only one last name in that whole area. So, and it's the only place in France where that last name comes from. And so this little community in the mountains was it. And
so your grandmother was French.
Hmm.
Is that right?
She was. Yeah, she was the granddaughter of French immigrants. Right. And my grandfather was the son of Italian immigrants. And then on the Healy side, everybody's Irish. Yes. And my grandparents were the ones that immigrated to Argentina. So, but their families were still back in Ireland. So so I knew them growing up.
What took them to Argentina?
Which was really cool. Well... My grandfather needed to get out of Ireland in a hurry.
Was he a gangster?
Well, he had been involved in the War of Irish
Independence. Oh, I see. Wow. And, okay.
Yeah. He had been in the IRA.
Wow, okay.
And, so he had been in prison, and
what a history you've got! Wow,
that's crazy.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. He had, you know, he had a life out of a novel, really. And
wow.
Yeah. So, and he really wanted to come to the U.S., but the quota for Irish immigrants was covered for like that year and the next, and so so he ended up going to Argentina. Which
you watch every movie from I don't know what era it would be, but you know, certainly movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and pretty much every policeman in New York City was called O'Leary or Riley, and all speaking right. with sort of high
Sullivan.
Yes, with sort of New York Irish accents, weren't they?
Right, yeah. And my grandfather's brothers were in, they settled in Boston, and his sister settled in San Francisco, and but she, you know, she was the one that ended up you know, way south. And it was interesting because he was a chemist by profession, but he didn't speak any Spanish, so he was never able to work as a chemist, so he had to, you know, find something else to do. So wow. He had a really interesting life, very interesting.
Have you never thought about writing? You said it was like a life out of a novel. It seems to me that most novelists write about things they know, certainly on their first book. So is that not something that you could do?
I've written sort of the bare bones of his story and my grandmother's story. She also had a very interesting life because she was in London and she worked for the post office and was helping move stuff back to Ireland that maybe it wouldn't have been considered okay. To do.
Why are you asking these questions, Andrew? Well,
I've just unleashed a whole can of worms.
I hope the statute of limitations applies.
They might be coming after you now.
But the problem with writing about that is to be able to write a novel, you have to be good at dialogue. Mm-hmm. And that is not one of my talents. I suck at writing dialogue. So so I've written brief versions of their lives, but it's just, something for my nephews and the
posterity.
The children of my cousins, so that will stay. And I actually made little books with pictures and so that doesn't get lost.
That's cool. Changing tact a little bit, I was looking on your on your website, which is lorrainehealy.net. I don't know how up to date it is. I don't have a website, but I know people complain about how difficult it is.
I made it up to date.
Oh, excellent! Well, that's good. I'm glad I went on it then, because I was reading the section you've got on. So I clicked on pinholes. Naturally, there's other things I could have clicked on, but I clicked on pinholes or lensless cameras. And you've got a really thought-provoking sort of introduction, I guess, really. And it reminded, I'd forgotten that you're only quite fairly new to pinhole photography in April of 2017. After bumping into Zeb, former guest at Blue Moon Cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're talking about how pinhole has affected you, and I wonder if you could perhaps enlarge upon it. You talk about the challenges we all face about extreme wide angles, which is not in all pinhole cameras, but with some of them. But then you say this: I keep thinking about how strongly enthralled to this pinhole process I have become. One of the things I love about it is I now re-look at my entire world thinking what it would look like in a pinhole exposure. You say a bit more, but so tell us about how pinhole photography has changed your sort of whole visual approach.
That was one of the most amazing things, I think, about pinhole. It's just that possibility of really getting very, very close to something. And for example, lately I've been working on a series of mailboxes, just mailboxes that are different. You know how it is, it's like you see one and you go, interesting. That's a very cute or different mailbox. And then of course you see them everywhere. You start, and I like that sort of that quirkiness that some people have that will move them to make their mailbox.
You're talking different. About these things that Americans have at the bottom of their drive with a little flag on,
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so, most people have just something that you buy at the
hardware store
on the hardware store and put up. But some people just have really elaborate ones or decorated ones, just different. So, but anyway, I like that with pinhole, it's just these angles allow you to see landscape, for example, in a totally different way. And I got Steve Gosling's book this year, Lensless mm-hmm. Landscapes, mm-hmm. And I saw that he sort of mentioned that the same thing in the introduction of the book, and how you know, you look at something and you think, oh, that this would make a good pinhole, but really, until you see the negative, you don't really exactly know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. It might work, and you know, it might not, but it's always a little bit surprising. And so it made me change my thinking about you know, where to go to get a photograph, or you know, it's made me revisit many, many places, because I think, oh, you know, I wonder how this place would look shot with a pinhole. So that's where that came from.
And do you find yourself leaning more towards color these days? Because, you know, you do stand out amongst the folks we see pop up in the Facebook group. Not so many favor color.
I've always been enamored of color, and I think I will remain a mm-hmm. color photographer forever. I do shoot a lot of black and white around this time of the year, because it's, you know, there's like almost no point to shooting you know, color. Yeah, around this time, and I'd rather save, you know, the film for when it's going to look a little
nicer,
you know. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I see in color, and you know, I like strong color, and so I can't give it up.
You're certainly the results you've been getting in color have certainly spurred me on, and I think others, to dabble a bit more in color photography. But like you, you know, you've got to wait until you get some half decent light.
You're an influencer. Right. You're an influencer.
You are. Yeah. Although you've only been at this since... Oh, first of all, Steve Gosling. Yeah, you mentioned Steve Gosling. That's what I made a mental note while you were talking. I did try and reach out to him. So Steve wrote this book that you referred to, Lensless Landscapes, isn't it? And he shot pretty much exclusively on the 0.6x6 camera, 0.2000, with...
Right.
Seemed to be Pan F was pretty much the one film stock he used. And
right.
And he was one of the guys who really influenced me to pick up that very same camera. You know.
Which I love.
So anyone who wants to be inspired or wants to get a reason to pick up a Zero camera, I'm sure other pinhole cameras are clearly available. But, you know, he made a stunning body of work of his... Of the coastlines around where he lives. I don't know whether he's still doing pinhole work. I've not come across him on social media. I did try and reach out to him by email a while ago, and I never heard anything back, so I don't know what he's doing. But he would make a wonderful guest, if nothing else, just to talk about that time when he was making that book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wrote him an email through via his website, and... because I wanted to buy the book, and
and he responded, did he?
Yeah, he responded right.
Okay.
Maybe I'll right away. And,
maybe just ignored me and responded to you.
But he was, you know, it was like, you know, within a couple of weeks or so.
We'll reach out.
Yeah. But I absolutely loved the book, and I think you were the one that suggested it. So thank you. It was a great, I do love the work. It's absolutely gorgeous.
A very consistent body of work is a sort of sepia tone to it all as well, isn't it?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Lots of leading lines, piers, water, curry, you know, all the magic ingredients, you know.
Yeah.
Those eye catchers,
Lorraine. Yeah. You went from, although you've got pinhole gas, you know, we'll talk a little bit about since 2017, and you bumped into Zeb. You list here, I don't know if this is up to date, Terrapin 6x6, Terrapin 6x9, because I know you bumped into Todd recently, Ondu 6x6 Rise version 3, Reality So Subtle 6x6, Holger Pinhole Zero Image 6x6, Harman Titan 4x5, Pinhole Flyer 6x6, Noon Multi Format Pinhole. I just do my research, Corey. You know, you heard of that thing called research? That's what you do for guests. Come on.
I don't want to. What's the point?
This is on Lorraine's website.
It's on my website. This is
in that little section about pinholes. Right at the bottom, Lorraine lists all these cameras.
I see. Here we are.
Oh, yeah.
Right there at the very bottom.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, any plans for any more?
I'm really happy with the ones I have. You know, I get tempted. One that I have been eyeing for a long time is one of Cesari's. I think it's the Vermeer 6x9. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's sort of like that sort of yellow kind of wood. I think that's just beautiful, and I do like, from what I see, the type of shutter that he puts on them, because that's a big consideration for me. That's why I had to sell my Reality So Subtle that I loved. Mm.
This fidget is tiny.
I have an old sports injury in my hand, and so my thumb doesn't work very well, and I don't have a lot of strength in that hand, and so the shutter of the Reality was too hard, and I kept, you know, introducing movement into the shot. So that's one of the things.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah. No. This just, you know, that I have to think about shutters when I'm looking at a pinhole camera, and the weight. For example, the noon multi-format. I absolutely loved. I love the work of John Scarborough.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of work with the Noon. And so I got one, you know, and then I discovered it was just too heavy for me to take around. So, you know, those are sometimes the reasons why I have to get rid of cameras. Yeah. It's not that the camera is not fantastic. It's just that it doesn't work for me. Yeah.
We'd like to get John on the podcast. I've asked him a few times, but he
I hope you do. I just love his work.
Everything he puts up there, you know, is just...
I know, everything.
Really,
everything.
Really good.
Yes. And
Who?
Yeah.
He's a mono... What's his handle? Monoblod, is it? Something like that, isn't it, John Scott?
Monobod.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He does a lot of sprocket stuff as well. And,
Really
good. He's resisted.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm a total groupie. Everything he puts
on. So come on, John, if you're listening, you know I've been after you for ages to come on.
Yeah.
I think I asked him a few times as well. Yeah.
All right. So there we are. That's show 100.
Show 100.
Yeah.
I think Greg asked me about music. Mm-hmm. And yes, I love music, but I don't usually listen to music while I'm shooting. But when I'm scanning and, you know, doing sort of post work, you know, getting rid of the dust on a negative and that kind of stuff, yes, I listen to a lot of music, and mostly it's Irish and Celtic music.
Cool. Fiddle-dee-dee music.
That's...
I used to go in another lifetime. I'd go to Belfast regularly on business, and there was a guy who was fairly high up in Northern Ireland electricity, and he would take me. We would go out of an evening, and we'd go to some restaurant, and then we'd go out drinking somewhere, and he would take me to a bar in Belfast called Fibber McGee's, and he would always say that we'll go and listen to some of that fiddly-dee music, and we just go, and there would be people playing fiddles and, you know, whatever, and we drink loads of Guinness.
Yeah. Sounds fun to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of music I love. So, but I never, while I'm shooting, I usually just it's just the camera and me. When I'm driving, I like to listen to books on tape, or you know, now they're downloaded into the phone. But
yeah.
But while
books
while
on I'm tape, books on 8-track,
or the Lensless Podcast, we
call that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or the Lensless Podcast. Yeah, but I also listen to the podcast, or you know, lots of podcasts. You know, when doing scanning, and because all that takes so much time. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great way to keep sane while doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about listening to us keeps you sane. People might have been pleased to have 2.5 months break. Yeah. Anyway, we're back. Yeah. We hope we've overcome the technical issues, but we'll see. We won't really know until people start complaining.
But... yeah. cool.
Lorraine, where can people find you and buy your poetry books and look at your photographs?
Well, my photographs, my website, I think that's the best place. It's where, you know, the most recent stuff is all together. And that is www.lorrainehealy.net. Mm-hmm. And let's see. I'm also on Flickr, Instagram, and Twitter.
You're all over.
Yeah. Omnipresent. I'm all over the place. Yes. And then, you know, my books, what can I say? You know, Amazon is probably the most direct place.
Can they get that through your website?
I haven't
linked it.
Done the, you know, doing the selling capability through my website. Right. It seems like, you know, one more step. Mm. And you know,
yeah, okay, cool.
It's, yeah, or you know, you know somebody doesn't like Amazon and
yeah,
they can just send me an email or contact me, you know.
Yeah,
because I you know, I have books here. So
yeah, cool.
And thoroughly recommend both those that we've talked about. They're both very different, but the one about your early life in Buenos Aires, was it Buenos Aires? Argentina, anyway. And
yeah.
And then your other one that you spoke so beautifully about your observations of just walking down the lane, basically, which is just wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what that book is all about. throughout a year. So.
Cool. And it's about observation, and it reminds us that there are things to, you know, to interest us just on our doorstep if we just open our eyes.
Step out. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, Lorraine, thanks for giving up your Sunday morning for a little while and talking.
Yeah, you can go back to bed now. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was great to talk to you guys.
We'll see you in 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
And the rest of you, 2 weeks.
Yeah. We'll see everybody soon.
Bye.
Hi, Andrew and Julie.
Hello.
I sent the request to your phone, and I was just a second ago. I said, oh, wait a second. He's not doing his phone. He's doing Julie's phone.
Yeah. We'll see if it works better.
Yeah, Lorraine Healy is here.
I know. I can hear her. How are you doing, Lorraine?
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, okay. Yep. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too.
Anyway,
how's the weather?
The weather's been cold and frosty, about zero, about freezing, you know, temperature outside.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we're fully locked down here, so you know.